You want to achieve great things? You want to reach the next level? Well, so does every other entrepreneur. You know what that means? You have to take every competitive advantage possible. Welcome to Let's Talk Business, the show where we're going to show you how to create this competitive advantage by being more productive and sharing the secrets of the world's top performers. I'm your host, Kenny Aronson, and I think it's time to get down to business.
As you try to achieve great things in life, you're going to come into obstacles, you're going to have failures, you're going to make mistakes, but these aren't as bad as some people would make them out to be. Every single failure that you encounter is a valuable opportunity for your brain to learn, for you to learn in terms of what you're capable of and what you accomplish in life. Today, I'm very excited to bring you my conversation with my new friend, Andre Piazza. Andre is a student of business and marketing. He's doing amazing things in the world in terms of helping other people to learn, to grow, and to do great things with his business and his podcast. He's an expert in terms of business, marketing. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about business and marketing and how you can help yourself to be the best version that you could possibly be. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and welcome Andre to the show. Hey, Andre, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. I'm happy to be here with you, Ken.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. And, you know, I was doing a little bit of research on you, and I'm very excited to have you on as a guest. I think that, you know, today we're going to have an amazing conversation about many different topics, ranging from learning from our failures to business and marketing. So, you know, thank you for being on the show. I greatly appreciate it, and I look forward to speaking with you.
Same here, Ken.
All right. So the way I usually run the show is, you know, I try to keep things natural. I try to keep things flowing. And to get this started, I always just start off with, you know, a basic question, just so the audience can get to know you a little bit better. So Andre, why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to in this world?
I am Andre Piazza, and I self-define as a student of business and a student of life. And that's really the capacity in which I'm joining you today, is to talk about, you know, how to learn from failure and how to bounce back stronger from it. My career, I'm an engineer, and I turned into a marketer. That's really where I found my vocational calling, was to work in marketing and help the marketing and sales teams be more effective. And in the course of that professional life and my own personal life, I ended up finding a lot of things that I couldn't initially explain. And I, you know, little by little, I started developing this body of knowledge, if you will, that is really open source around failure and how, you know, I could be improving myself and how I could be improving the teams that I worked with, the teams and the people that I engaged with. And so that is really how I got into this body of knowledge around how to fail and how to fail better.
Okay, awesome. We're definitely going to dive into, you know, a lot of those topics today, but I want to just, you know, point at one thing that you did in the past where you transitioned from an engineer to a marketer. And I'm curious because right now I'm actually in engineering school. So what made you make that change into marketing? What drew you into business and marketing?
I think there were a variety of different things here. Number one is, you know, the realization that you can actually engineer and build out things being a marketer. And that was important to me, especially in a corporate environment where there were a lot of moving parts and you needed to influence people to get things done. I realized that the process was the same and I could be building things out that would have way more impact on the marketing side than on the engineering side. And there's also a vocational calling to all this, which is, you know, what's your purpose? What are you supposed to be doing? What do you enjoy doing? And one thing that really challenged me and continues to challenge, I think that's one of the fundamentals struggle, one of the fundamental struggles of the marketer is really the marketplace, the industry, the segments. How do you reach out to them? How do you activate a message? How, you know, is this generating benefits? How do you sell stuff? That is really something that is really enticing to me. So I found something that was really challenging, that was really interesting, and allow me to continue to build things out. So I guess that's how I would describe my vocational calling.
Okay, that's awesome. I can definitely relate to the fact that, you know, you really like the challenge, because when I joined engineering school, you know, I joined for the challenge. And over the past year, I've gotten into entrepreneurship. So, you know, trying to
put my stuff out there in the marketplace. And I will say that, you know, it is a challenge, but that's something that I find to be very exciting because, you know, it's a massive learning experience because, you know, you typically don't get it right on the first try. So it takes a lot of trial and error. It takes planning and it takes a lot of learning. So I found it to be extremely exciting so far. And later in the show, we'll talk a little bit more about business and marketing, just from your experience and your expertise so far. So, you know, I look forward to diving more into that, but you know, I want to touch on something that, you know, you and I just talked about a little bit, and that's learning. So what are some failures and mistakes that you've made and how did you overcome these?
I think a lot of this is, if I were to put in words and examples of things that I failed over my, in the past, right? And they were like major learning blocks. I think one is to realize that engineering was not cutting for me, was one failure, and was one that, you know, it was really major and made me ask different questions, right? So I think that, you know, the first learning here is that when you realize that you failed, it puts you in a position in which you have to change the questions you're asking yourself, and potentially even the way that you're measuring and seeing things. Number two, since you're interested in that transition between engineering into marketing, that is not something that is trivial. So learning about that and realizing that it was a process, not, you know, just a couple of interviews or something like that, was something also very important in this transition. And number three was getting started as a marketer. That process was different. And I think, you know, that was not necessarily a failure. It was just a process in itself in realizing, you know, hey, now that I've landed new ground, how do I operate in here? And I think it's important, you know, as a metaphor in putting all this together, because, you know, you realize that, you know, first you fail, then you realize that you got to change somehow. And number three, once you're working to actually make that change happen, you're going to be learning new things. And then you're setting yourself up for a new process of learning again, right? So those are, you know, were some of the failures that I've experienced. But throughout, and I wanted to mention that, I mentioned that on my intro, and I think it's also very relevant to a lot of people out there, is to realize, and, you know, working in organizations that are composed of many, many people, we're talking 50, 100, sometimes even thousands of people, and getting things done with that amount of people is really challenging. And one of the things that still interests me is the fact that a lot of people in that environment, collectively, even working with a lot of smart people, the level of collective intelligence was really low. The quality of the decisions that were made as the collective were actually being pushed over the lower part of the bar. And that was something that really caught my attention and was something that I consider in parts failure, because I was trying things, I was trying to get work done, I was managing projects, I was trying to influence the organization to do certain things, and some of these things never actually came into being, or some of these things were actually taken and the credit was also taken from me, and vice versa. So a variety of different situations in which I was part of, it made me realize, if I want this organization, these hundreds of people, to actually be making cohesive decisions that actually benefit everyone involved, we're going to have to step up the bar. We're going to have to do something about it. So that is also very relevant in this context of learning, how we as individuals learn and how we as organizations and teams actually get to work together.
Okay, thank you, Andre. I think that's a fantastic answer. And I want to dive a little bit more into, you know, what are some of these specific important things that need to happen for us to learn from our mistakes?
Well, that's the way that human beings actually learn. So we're learning this from neuroscience. So first of all, I'd like to take a step to define what is learning and what is failure. So just as a foundation here for our conversation. So learning would be pretty much, failure to start with, would be the gap between what we expected versus how reality presented itself. So it's a minus equation, which is super simple and one that is really powerful for us to be deriving conclusions about this and really learning from it. So it's a simplification. In practice, failures can be much more complex, and we can deep dive into all that. But essentially, if you have a reality as presented itself minus the amount of expectations that you had, that is really the amount of failure that you are going to be experiencing, right? So that gap between what you expected and reality. In that context of failure, I can now define what learning is, right? Because we're trying to bounce back. So it's pretty much the commitments that you make after you have experienced failure, your ability to take on new risks, which is pretty much a factor that is going to be putting you out there again, right? Which is going to be action-oriented, as you mentioned in the beginning of the podcast. And together in that learning process, your willingness to be vulnerable. In other words, your willingness to experience what you got to experience after you put yourself out there again, right? So that is what I'm defining as learning. And putting that into the context of the brain dynamics, the definings of neuroscience, that process actually happens in our brains, right? Failure and learning is a process that is happening in our brains. And there are a few things that we can talk here but about the neuroscience behind all this. But what is really important for us to realize is that failing happens really fast in our brains. And it's a process that is driven by what we call the lizard brain. It's something very primitive, but it's something very, very efficient in keeping us alive, right? That's the part of our brains that is really oriented towards survival. And usually that lizard brain has a binary reaction to things. It either perceives things as a reward or as a threat. And that reaction, that binary reaction is going to be dictating the way that we have our first reaction towards things. We either get away from things, like the flight reaction, if you will, or we're going to be getting closer to things, which in a way is the fight situation, or in terms of learning, curiosity and willingness to explore. So a lot of what I'm going to be talking next is really around turning that reaction of a threat and get away from the problem or from the failure, or try to actually give it to somebody else, or try to step up and take over failure that happened to someone else and actually own that. And how do you own that process? How do you get closer to that very thing that you want to get away from? That is really the context of, you know, how failure happens and how learning comes in. So if you're asking me for a definition of learning, it's really that process in which we realize that the lizard brain is reacting very fast and it's giving a binary response, and we actually start developing stories that activate our mammalian brain, which is a much more developed brain and processes that help us to build stories. And from those stories, they're going to be dictating how we and how the people involved in this process can actually go back and re-engage with the problem, right? That is really the power of our human brain. If you read the latest books on the topic, for example, Sapiens, it's really going to tell you how the Homo sapiens was much more successful than the previous versions, our predecessors, in terms of occupying the world, just because he had this capacity of building out stories, telling stories and building myths and things that we could actually be taking action on. And here we are, you know, thousands of years later, we're dominating and we're discussing this very thing, which is, you know, a high level of cognitive ability, right? The ability to talk about learning, the ability to talk about failure, and the ability to actually build stories about that. So learning overall, you know, I can, now that I've covered all these bases and foundation, It's really this process of realizing that we failed here. And number two, let's start building stories that are really helping us be more effective, be willing to take on more risks and be vulnerable again.
Okay, wonderful. So what are some examples of these stories that we can build so that we can learn from them and, you know, grow ourselves?
I'm going to be telling you of the three different roles in which people usually fall prey to. I fell prey to, and how we can actually overcome that. And, you know, that's going to be illustrating how we can take on these stories and change the pace of the story. So I usually call this the drama triangle. So those are three different roles in which are less than favorable, but they're very common. And they are the villain, the hero, and the victim. So the villain is the one that actually points out failure. The villain is the one that finds blame in others and or even in yourself. And it's a negative role because that, you know, it's more than fact-finding. It's actually blaming. And blaming is not something that is really actionable because before taking action, people get, you know, are going to be trying to get away from the blame or there are going to be implications other than taking action, right? So we need a role from the villain that is going to be helping us take action. And we're going to get to that in a second, right? Before I do that, let me introduce you the hero. The hero is another role in which, after a perceived failure, seeks temporary relief. In terms of, I can handle it, I can try to erase it or minimize what happened here, or even poor you, you're not able to help to cope with the situation. You're not able to handle this. So let me step in and do what I need to do, which is another unfavorable one because it's preventing other people from taking responsibility and action over what they need to do. Right? And finally, the victim, which is putting yourself at the effect of something. It's really something that disempowers people in terms of thinking that there is nothing that they can do to actually change the course of things. So that role of the victim is another negative one, and it's one that is very prevalent out there and in the situations, right? It's realizing, not a realization, it's much more than that. It's putting yourself in a situation in which nothing you do or very little that you can do about changing that situation. And it doesn't feel good. So here are some of the examples of the stories that you can tell yourself or tell your group to actually change the course of things. From the villain, you can actually put yourself in a situation of the challenger. And the challenger is going to be asking questions, right? Or provoking others to take action. So, for example, you know, in here, let's say that we were recording this podcast and somehow the recording didn't happen, right? I thought we were recording, right? And by the way, that is the worst nightmare for podcasters, right? Is to actually make the recording and then realize that, you know, nothing was recorded.
Yeah, I've heard horror stories of that. It hasn't happened to me yet, though.
It won't happen to you, Ken. It won't happen to you. It happened to us just once, and that was enough for us to learn a bunch of it, right? But, you know, here's one example. I felt that we were recording. I thought that is what happened. Is that, you know, what happened here, right? It's pretty much just clarifying the facts, but you realize there's a question involved in here, and it's one in particular that makes very few assumptions, right? I'm even saying my assumption was X. What really happened here, right? So it's that kind of questioning, it's that kind of position that actually draws people in and help them get closer into the problem. That is really the role of the challenger. Here's another one, you know, from changing that hero role into something else, you know, how about you try to be the coach of the situation, right? Instead of facilitating yourself to, you know, to be shown as the hero here, you are facilitating self-empowerment, right? You're not empowering yourself, you're facilitating that others empower themselves. That's really what's happening here, right? So for example, as the coach, if the recording stopped in our podcast, I could be saying, look, you know, here are some of the options that we can take now that we failed here. We can re-record this. we can try to go into the cloud and see if that there was a recording in there. We can actually, I can look into my files to see if I actually happen to have a recording here for that, right? Or, you know, look, you know, I know that this is, you know, this probably is feeling pretty bad. Let me know if you need any help, right? That would be the position of the coach here in that kind of situation. And finally, another story is the stories you tell yourself, stepping out of that victim role into the creator role, which is claiming personal power, right? The coach is facilitating others to claim empowerment. The creator is actually you stepping up and empowering yourself. I've decided to re-record this. That is something that I could be saying. I chose to re-engage with you, even though we lost the recording. We, you know, never happened, but you know, that could be one example of how we could be doing this. Or let's say that it was a, you know, an event, it was a presentation, and it was lost, right? We can find other ways to contribute to that. You know, look, I can no longer give you that because that moment is gone. I can give you something else. What is that thing, right? You can create new situations. You can choose to re-engage. You can pretty much, you know, define a new course of action. And a lot of life is really about this, is, you know, taking on those opportunities to define a new course of action and going from there. So those are some of the stories that you can tell yourself and change negative roles, negative perceptions in stepping up and claiming responsibility, claiming the ability to do more, and claiming control over the things that are going to happen next.
Thank you, Andre. I love how you divided up into three categories, and that's something that I'm definitely going to take into consideration. And for the listeners, if you want a recap of everything that Andre just talked about, there will be an infographic and a summary of it in the blog post for this episode. So I want to talk about something else related to failure and overcoming your mistakes. What happens if we don't learn from our failures?
The implications of not learning from failure, I think number one that is pretty clear at this point is that a sensation of disempowerment, right? So if you're feeling like you have no control, if you're feeling like you got here because of something else in your life, it's probably because you're not learning from what happened. And it's not really about that, you know, learning as in school, like, you know, getting the, you know, mental activity. It's actually stepping up and becoming the better version of you, right? It's really that. That is the learning that we're talking here. Another implication of not learning is you do not feel capable of doing what's required in your life. And I think that's really the situation for many people, is that we have one or two areas in our lives in which we just feel disempowered to take action. We feel cornered. We feel that we have tried everything and things didn't pan out. So that is the sensation of someone that is not learning. Or it's not really that you're not learning. You're probably learning in pieces, or it's partial learning. And a lot of the invitation that happens when you are in that space is to take on and show up as a person, right? Show up full body. So, you know, use all your mental health, your personal abilities to show up there and take things on again and do what is required of you, right? It's like, you know, Woody Allen says, 80% of life is about just showing up. And it's not just being present. It's about, you know, full body presence. So the implications are you're not feeling like doing that. And if that's your situation, here's an invitation. The invitation is for you to show up, to present yourself as a person, as, you know, the best person you can be at that moment, and to take on those problem areas in your life and actually make a difference, right? Moving into the general direction of where you want to be and see how things go, right? So a lot of that is really open-mindedness, and, you know, a lot of that is really open-heartedness, because you're going to have to endure pain, right? And that is the other thing that is an implication. Pain is felt as something really, really alone and secluded, and you're trying to avoid that. It doesn't feel good talking about it. You do not want to talk to others about it, right? That is another really implication of all this. You know, you're feeling more secluded from people. And that prevents you from taking action. That prevents you from enlisting allies in this process. This is preventing you from getting people to actually help change that situation, or even to learn new things about the situation that others can teach you. So those are some of the implications of not learning.
Thank you, Andre. So what are some things that we can do to learn and grow faster, whether it's just learning in general or learning from our mistakes?
Well, one thing, I'm going to give you a process that something that can be applied to yourself and that can also be applied in the context of your teams. It's super simple. It's a three-step process for learning. Step number one is really establishing insights, right? Observations, fact-finding, right? Collect everything you can, right? Observe. What are the expectations that I had? What are the things that I was expecting others to do? What were they thinking or expecting also, right? How did they feel? And one very good clue here is for you to latch on to the narratives, because this is actually much deeper, right? The narratives that that's pretty much how human beings decide. They decide based on those narratives and beliefs, right? So the more that you can actually get closer to what is the mentality of people, the more you're going to be able to understand why they do what they do and they behave the way they do, right? So try to get to all that. And over here in this part of fact-finding, collecting insights, it's really about observing and not making judgment, right? So really, this is about deferring judgment. This is about collecting facts and having a good amount of data available. So in step number two, which is establishing patterns, you are rich into that amount of facts or data, right? So let's go back into our example of no recording, right? Well, it just happens because I'm a podcaster that I do have a good understanding of how recording works here, right? I use the same tool. I've been there before, right? So I have a rich amount of data here. Well, you know, we can try things. We can go to the cloud. We can check our hard drives. Maybe there is a temporary file that got recorded somewhere else, right? Those are all things that, you know, can be part of this. And it so happens to be because I know this, right? But in step number two, when I'm establishing patterns, I'm able to realize that, look, this is fairly common. This happens to other people, other podcasters report on that. And in fact, it happened to us, right? To my partner and I in our own podcast in the past, right? How did we handle that, right? What was the gap between our expectations and reality, right? What were the things that we could have done here? So that is step number two. Patterns is really where you're going to be stepping outside of your own biases, and you're going to be looking into the overall facts that you collected, you know, hopefully with, you know, the least amount of biases that you could, even though that is difficult because we're humans, right? But patterns is really about, you know, piecing everything together and composing a picture. And then number three, this is where you choose to make commitments, right? Remember what I mentioned to you before about what learning is. When you actually choose to make commitments, this is when you're deciding things and you're stepping into action. And that is really a powerful thing, because when you are making commitments, you can actually override that sensation of, you know, I feel threatened, or I want to get away from this problem. And you are committing into a new course of action, right? So you can name the temptations, for example. You can ask questions yourself, you know, am I willing to do things differently? You know, am I willing to do things in a different way? Am I willing to change the course of things here, right? And really have that conversation in the sense of engaging others and measuring and helping them get to that point, right? Not necessarily forcing them, but really influencing them to be able to have their own conversations and insight collection, establishing patterns, and then finally themselves committing into things because they chose to, right? So that is the overall perspective of how you can actually learn from things.
Thank you, Andre. So we've talked a little bit about your podcast and some of your experiences with it. And I'm curious, how did you get started with your podcast? You know, what happened and why did you guys create the podcast?
Our podcast came out because this friend of mine, we're both from Brazil originally, and we go back almost 15 years. And this friend of mine was living in Miami for 6 months, and we would engage with one another on a weekly basis. And I would have conversations. And at a point he mentioned, I think some of these conversations we could have recorded because I'm growing on the things that I'm learning here in Miami. And I'm asking you questions about how to actually put myself out there professionally and get a job. And this is a completely different picture that people in Brazil do not necessarily understand that. That could be of value. And then I replied, this is, back in 2016, I said, back in the day, I really wanted to put together a podcast. I never found a partner to do this. Maybe this is the opportunity. And then in December 2016, so 2 years ago, he gave me a call and he said, you know what, here's what we could do. We could do a podcast about entrepreneurship. We could be interviewing people just like you do over here, Ken. And we could be learning and extracting lessons learned, resources. Things that they want to share with the community so we can all grow. And I said, that sounds like a fantastic perspective. When do we get started? And then January the following year, January 2017, we started planning out on how we would be doing this just because we had zero experience with audio and podcasts and even interviewing people. And that has been our learning curve in building these things out. We launched in November 2017, so it's been 1 year, we've been out there for an entire year. We interview people, we talk to entrepreneurs, people that actually changed ideas, aspirations into something concrete. So lots of learning in that process, right, in creating that new environment and making that happen and in a successful way. What are the things that they learned? What are the resources? What is the mentality of these people? That is really what we're trying to get to on the podcast. And much to our satisfaction, 1 year later, we can, we look into the results of all this. And number one, him and I, we learn a bunch about working with others, right? Because we're interacting all the time. We're helping, or coping with each other sometimes or getting things done. And that is really a fantastic process, right? In engaging and working with others. Number two, we can see the change in the people that we interviewed and they talk to us about this. You made me reflect about my own trajectory. Thank you for that, right? So in a way, we're kind of repeating that, insight collection or that coaching process in which we're asking open questions and we're letting people actually take action on it. And number three, we see the change in our audience. So people are coming back and engaging with us, and they're telling us stories about how much they learn out of our interviews, what they like or even dislike about our podcast. So that is a fantastic process, and it's a little bit of an addictive thing. So when you actually engage with people and they tell you what a difference you made in their lives, that is really something that really enriches you. And it's really addictive to that point of I wish everything I did would actually have this kind of impact. Somebody to tell me, hey, this made a difference in my life. Yeah. And I think, Ken, I was even going to ask, is that how this podcast is working for you? Are you getting that feedback? Is that something that you experienced yourself?
Yeah, so I'm still at the pretty early stages of doing these interviews, but I think that the feedback has certainly been great so far. And, even the feedback from myself, as I've been talking to people like yourself, Andre, from all over the world and doing different things, it's been an amazing learning opportunity. And I will agree with you, it is addictive, just the opportunity to learn from people every single time that I interview someone new. And at the same time, provide the listeners of the show immense value so that it can help them in their lives and so that it can, make their lives better and the people that they surround themselves with so that it can make their lives better as well. And, from a year from now, I very much look forward to seeing how the show is going and seeing how much I've learned and grown. So I'm curious, Andre, what are your plans for the future of your podcast?
Well, one of the things that we realized is that we are experiencing that level of exponential growth, which is something that people really talk about in terms of startups or product launch, or even, you know, as a marketing perspective, you know, going viral. It's that amount of exponential growth in which you're capturing attention in, you know, 2x, 3x, 10x, you know, every new interval. So we've experienced that. And I was really curious because, you know, I saw the curve of total downloads. And at the same time, I it looked like in something exponential, but, you know, one thing is to look like exponential. Another thing is to be exponential. So I got all the data into Google Sheets, and I asked Google Sheets to model what would be the exponential fit to that. And lo and behold, Google Sheets actually gave us an exponential fit, a curve. And it even told us it's 99% conforming to that curve. So,
oh, wow. That's amazing. I hope mine does that as well.
that is exactly what you're setting yourself up to. It's really that process of growing exponentially, because people are consuming these interviews and they're learning, and it's making a difference in their lives. And the algorithms of the podcast platforms out there, they're really paying off on that, right? They realize that people are subscribing, that people are actually listening more and listening, you know, entire episodes, and it's giving back to you, right, in terms of more listeners. So we're experiencing a little bit of that, and that is another thing that is really exciting, because you can see growth from, you know, month to month. We're like, you know, 2 or 3x our previous month. And so we're looking first and foremost to continuing giving, creating great content to this community that we're creating, right? So we're creating new audio programs. You know, here's one potential way for you to model things is, as much as you have the interview, when you're talking to the other person, you can do another episode in which you just comment about those things. So that is the next thing for us. We're going to be doing essentially every interview is going to be followed by another episode in which we make comments and we talk about some of the resources that they mentioned. And we can talk about our own experiences with those resources and what difference that can make when you have a particular type of project, when you're looking to do certain things and so forth, right? So examples here, one of my interviews was about with someone that is an expert in design thinking. So I pretty much, you know, it helped me get the interview and really focus on what the guest has to say. And then after that, I can talk about my own experiences with design thinking, you know, projects that I've worked in the past, the difference that it made in my life, recommendations that I have, right? And then I can get some of those resources that they mentioned and sprinkle that in, you know, go read this book if you're looking to do this. If you're interested in understanding this angle, probably that other book or this website is going to be better, right? That type of a comment. So it can be brief, 5 to 10 minutes, but that is something that we're looking to do in our podcast, which is, you know, really focus on the interviews on the guests, and then have another episode, you know, in which we show up to this community and we talk to them about what happened in that episode and we give them some more.
I really like that idea, Andre. I'd never thought of, you know, doing that before, a reflection episode, but I really like the sound of that. I think it'd be something really cool to do. So I'm gonna look into doing that. So to the listeners out there, I hope that you've enjoyed this episode so far. And I think that this is a good time to take just a couple minute commercial break. So we'll be back in just a few minutes with the DaVinci Mindset Podcast. Welcome back, everyone, to the DaVinci Mindset Podcast. The first half of this podcast has been jam-packed, filled with value related to overcoming your failures, starting your own podcast, learning. And I'm very excited for the second half of this podcast with my friend, Andre Piazza. Welcome back, Andre. So in the second half of the episode, I want to deviate a little bit from what we were talking about before, and I want to go a little bit more into what you're doing with your career in business and marketing. So I'm curious, what drew you into business and marketing specifically?
I think that was really the desire to make an impact in people's lives, and especially in realizing that, you know, my background in engineering is technology. So I really liked building things out. And guess what? You know, this is a world in which technology is surrounding us. I felt that marketing would be my opportunity to tell a very compelling story, a very authentic story about those products. and that could be generating an impact into their lives. So that was one thing that drew me into all this. The other thing that drew me into this is that, you know, the challenging aspect of this in terms of, you know, exploring and learning how people buy and how people sell and how people process things, you know, how people actually create stories and how those stories actually drive an impact. That was something that really drew me into all this. And it continues to challenge me, right? So that perspective of continuing to learn and study and get more was something that really I looked forward to it. And finally, there was the aspect of being in business is something that really gets me into that creation space and mindset. So I love exploring business models, how things work, how things could be improved and taken to the next level, how things could be more inclusive. And I think, you know, business is really a great place to be because, you know, it's pretty much humans exchanging things, right? How can we take things to the next level? How can we, you know, explore and solve new problems? That is really why I'm into business.
Yeah, I have to say, Andre, you know, I've always been someone who's up for a challenge. And I know we talked about this a little bit at the very beginning of the episode. And you know, just the creation space availability of, you know, learning and creating new things when you're in business or entrepreneurship, I have found to be very attractive. So let's get into some nitty gritty details of what you do with what you do related to marketing. So what are some marketing concepts that people typically miss out on in their businesses that you found so far?
You know, I think the one thing that people do not realize is about, you know, the principles of marketing overall, right? Number one principle is, you know, not be interesting. Number two principle is tell the truth. And number three principle is live the truth. That is something that I learned. And it's something that is detailed in this book called Winning the Story Wars. On this book, there are fantastic examples coming from advertising, from marketing, from you know, day-to-day movements and narratives, and the author really explores how these things came together. And those were the principles that were put together for advertising in, you know, by the person that actually started promoting things. So that actually got my attention. And I think, you know, that is, you know, number one learning is that, look, this is about being authentic. And number two, it's about living that authenticity, right? It's not only about reporting the truth, right? What is authentic and genuine about your brand, about your product, or about yourself, but it's about actually taking, you know, really doing that in real life, right? So you can go back and tell some more the next time, right? And I think the second thing that people do not really understand and appreciate is that this is all about attention. Right? How do we capture attention? You can do that in a variety of different ways. Some of those are going to be requiring more resources, right? In the past, you'd need access to television equipment or, you know, to have pretty much a channel in which people, you would have a captive audience, pre-developed audience, right? Now, these days, we actually have that ability via social media in which we can capture, we can earn people's attention. Right? And there are a variety of other things that happens with attention. And some of those are the things that I mentioned to you about in neuroscience, how people learn, how people tell stories, how those stories actually make a difference into somebody else's life. So realizing that marketing is about these three things and also about attention is something that really can change the way that you choose to do this profession and how you engage with people.
Thank you, Andre. So what do you think are the most important practices in marketing and business?
Oh, gosh. Marketing is such a big area these days.
It's a loaded question.
Yeah, it is. It is a loaded question. And it's really rich and, you know, it's fascinating to see that variety. Even if you choose to be, you know, doing something specific as, let's say, demand generation for a company, for a business, there's going to be a variety of things that you've got to unpack and explore in there, right? So anything you choose to do in marketing is going to be a full-time job, right? Any specialty. But what I realize is that, you know, marketing these days, it's really about like, you know, look, you know, at the simplest level, to me, it's about what am I trying to do? What is my purpose? Why am I in business? What is this thing that I want to do? And then from there, when you have clarity around that, you decide how you're going to be promoting that, how you're going to be doing marketing. So you decide the channels in which you're going to be activating that message. You decide how you, you know, the messages you're going to be telling about your business, about your brand, about your product. You decide what is your ideal client. And it's a process of learning a little bit and engaging with your audience and learning, you know, who comes back, learning about the problems that the marketplace has and how you actually solve and you solve better than others, right? So those are some of the things that are really important for a business to be doing these days, is this process of gaining clarity and taking action on it. And from there, collecting more information, more insights, you know, problems in the marketplace. How do people struggle in using my problem? What are the new problems that people actually experience after they use my solution? How can I differentiate from my competition, right? And establishing all that into a big process. That is pretty much what marketers, real, truly marketers do these days. They actually walk business, products, brands, people through that entire process.
Thank you, Andre. So do you have any specific marketing experiences or stories that you can share with the audience?
Oh boy, I'm loaded with stories about marketing. Do you have something in specific, or would you like me to pick one thing to share with the audience here?
How about you pick one thing?
All right, so let's see. And this is the, you know, the curse of knowledge is something that when you are actually part of something, you do not really realize how this is different or unique to other people. So I'm, you know, give me a moment here. I'm thinking about stories that I could be telling and
take your time.
To a particular audience.
Gotta find the best one.
Or, you know, one that could be even entertaining. So one, let me tell you this story that I told in a previous podcast that was about product management. And the interviewer was asking me questions about, you know, hey, how did you realize this? How did you do that? You know, tell us about a time in which you had a project or a product to manage and launch. So let me tell this story of a time in which I was working in tech. And because of my background in working in services, right, professional services that are used in technology, like repair, support operations via chat, via the phone, via the web, right? All that background actually translated into, I was offered a role to develop a new offering in the tech industry. And what was different about this offering was the fact that it would cover not only the hardware, the computer, but it would be also covering the software that was installed into the computer. So the background here is a computer manufacturer usually shies away from providing support to the software for a variety of reasons. Number one, the manufacturer doesn't manufacture that. It's manufactured by someone else. So they try to tailgate into that warranty, right? And shift the support over to them. And number two, it's because it's pretty costly. When you're supporting Windows, when you're supporting Microsoft Office and a variety of other productivity tools that people use out there, it takes a huge amount of time over the phone, which is consuming both, you know, the people on the call center. It's also consuming pretty much the telecom infrastructure. And this is all expensive, right? You got to train these people. You got to have more people. They're going to be more time stuck on the phone. So you're going to have more people, right? All these things really compound. And that is the reason why traditionally manufacturers shy away from software coverage. So we learned from market research that there was a possibility and people would be willing to pay an extra in order to get that software support. In an industry that has been pretty much, you know, the bar has been set around hardware coverage for so long, for decades on end, showing up with an offering that would be covering software would be incremental and really disruptive. And it really was in the end. So I'm saving the punchline, but you know, really marketing insights showed us that. And it also showed us that people wanted that to be affordable. So we really wanted to be innovative. but we also had to be affordable. We couldn't do pretty much, you know, anything we wanted. It had to be really a grounded approach, and costs were really important into developing this product, right? So the final costs would be really important. So I engaged in a variety of activities in there. One of them was really working with the teams, the development teams that would be supporting and building out this the infrastructure to this offer in terms of the people, the training that they needed, the infrastructure. When you're actually taking those type of calls, you need a stronger load balancing techniques. In other words, if one site is getting overwhelmed by calls or they're stuck, you gotta shift the load to other locations around the world that would be able to support that particular customer. So, you know, we came to learn and realize that that ended up being important in the launch of this thing. Develop also pricing for this new offering, which is really hard because you have no baseline. It's something new. So how do you price for that? We also worked in terms of launching this because it had been so long for the organization since the last time that organization launched anything. So how do we actually launch a new product here? All these things were part of the process of developing and launching this new offering. And the story that I really wanted to tell was, you know, the results of all that, which were really impressive to me. And that was a big aha moment. And in a way, that was my first job after transitioning out of engineering. So what a better way to validate a career change, or, you know, to manifest some kind of change in a way in which you're immediately successful, right? It didn't happen overnight, of course. You know, we had an entire year of working there, but it was really nice to see that the moment that we launched the new offering and we offered that on a global scale, we were able to actually see the results right away. So we became the number one offering in our segment within the first days of launching the product. In some countries around the world, we had a peak in terms of the revenue that we're capturing in selling computers. And that was really nice. Another thing that was really cool to see was that we're selling more of these when people were actually buying loaded computers or, you know, premium computers. In other words, we're actually capturing more share of wallet out of that customer that was already buying a premium system, which is a fantastic thing. And, you know, on the business of computers is really how a lot of the companies make money, is by selling the premium computers, right? People are willing to invest more on those. So seeing those things getting into action and, you know, everything that you worked for, even planned for, really becoming reality. And even the process of learning how it failed, right? You know, here are a couple of examples of how we failed. It's number one, we had provided training, or we thought we had provided training to thousands of call center technicians around the world. And lo and behold, the moment that you actually turn that on and people are making calls because they bought a computer and they paid extra for that support, they're going to be calling in. And when they call in, some of these people actually got refused support because the technicians didn't know that there was this new offering, because people were unclear in the system how to actually verify entitlement for this. So it was really interesting because the first team screaming about this were the sales teams. They were coming back and saying, look, this is not working. I'm getting calls on a daily basis of people screaming at me because I sold this thing to them and they cannot use it, right? So I decided to take on an approach of making note of all these things and taking back into the development team. So, you know, we could appreciate, you know, fact findings, insights, and even establish patterns, right? Because out of a conversation of, look, I'm selling something that you cannot deliver, it's one conversation. Another thing is to, you know, be able to find out what is happening. And a third thing is to solve for that, right? So you can go back and say, no, keep selling, because, you know, what you're selling is really good. So number one thing that I did in that situation was to actually get a log of each one of these customers. So the sales team provided identification information for the systems. So we could go back in into the telecom system, call center systems, verify what happened to each one of those customers. And after we had a list of 20 to 30 cases, the pattern was pretty evident. As far as the location of the call centers, as far as the questions that the customer asked, the course of action that was taken. And it really became evident that, number one, there was this thing of load balancing. In other terms, telecom systems actually shift the location that is going to be taking calls for each particular customer, right? This is what happens when you have a global infrastructure. And some of these sites actually didn't get trained by the training team because they never felt that that was a main site for this new offering. So we had to go back, and instead of doing just one new wave of training, we retrained people two or three times. And guess what? We got really better in really fast. In a matter of days, the amount of new cases was actually going down. And that was the other thing, is that, this is all working on the back end of the business and fixing things. I still owe an answer to the sales team. So the other thing that I did, and that was really cool because it drove a lot of safety into the offering and a lot of credibility, was to show that we're selling thousands of those new support contracts on a weekly basis, but just a handful of people were calling back. So the moment that I walked back in and I said, look, this is really 0.03% of our customers are calling you back, and that is the amount of people that you're getting in terms of problems, right? Not more. So percentage-wise, it's pretty neglectable. That was the moment that sales really woke up to the reality of, so I'm dealing with the exception here. The offer is safe. I can continue to sell this, and everything you told me is actually true, right? That was the moment in which, we gained the support of the sales team, and they really got behind all this so they could get the results that they wanted to. So I think that's really a cool story here, because it shows, it exemplifies everything that we spoke about, failure and learning. It shows that in a collective thing, it has enough of me and my own expectations for you to realize all that. And also, there is also this aspect of, the life of a marketer, which is not only engaging with the market, but also making it credible for the sales teams to continue to sell. Otherwise, and I realized, pretty quickly there, if the offering is not seen as relevant or credible or authentic by the sales teams, they are not going to be doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then if my product doesn't take off in launch, it's not going to be taken off later. This is the moment to make an impact, right? Which really speaks to those, the three rules for marketing, if you will, right? Be interesting. Number two, be authentic and live that authenticity, right? Part of us living that authenticity was fixing and actually telling the story back to sales. It's safe to sell. It's just, one or two customers. And by the way, this should go away any day from now. So there is a story for you.
Thank you, Andre. I love that story. There's just so many different things that we can take away from that. And I hope that the audience, they listened to the whole story and they got something from it, because I certainly did. And I want to shift this conversation a little bit to, kind of the overall state of entrepreneurship and business, not just in the United States, but all over the entire world. So I'm curious, Andre, what are some of the greatest opportunities that you see in the world right now?
You know what? Something that I've been exploring, and it's really cool for people to realize, for people that are willing to take entrepreneurial action, is digital marketing. But, which is a vast area, and there are so many things to talk about that. But one thing that is really an opportunity is how people are putting together businesses from scratch, just by, essentially finding out problems or opportunities on the web. So there is this author, his name is Noah Kagan, and he's actually put together several businesses. I think he was employee number 4 at Facebook or something like that. And he actually describes on the internet, so he was interviewed by Tim Ferriss, and he put together this blog post that is really long, but describes step by step the process that he's taking into identifying a problem on the web and actually creating a solution for that. And that essentially is sold to us. The message is, you know, how to create a business that is going to be yielding $1 million, right? A millionaire business out of the internet. So it's really interesting because, you know, number one, it's not a scam, right? So it's really authentic. Number two, it's a new way of assembling things and taking action using tools that are essentially available to us for free. The example that he uses is Chihuahua, right? So Chihuahua dogs, he essentially researched into Google search, what were the search trends for Chihuahua, what were the things that people were looking for in search, and identifying anything that was not being offered to them. And he assembled a website that positioned a product for those dogs, right? For Chihuahua dogs. So it's really interesting how he describes that on that blog post on Tim Ferriss' show. And also, it's really relevant if you, you know, Noah has a variety of podcasts and other content created on his own website. You know, if you know, go to noahkagan.com, you're going to find a lot of material. And third, another recommendation is this book that was put together by Tim Ferriss that is called The Tools of the Titans. I'm in, you know, just as background, I'm not really a big fan of Tim Ferriss, but he's actually put this book in which he interviews titans, right? People that are really experts in their fields. And he brings resources and recommendations and even narratives and processes from these people. And it's super, super interesting to see how the entire thing developed. So he has a chapter on Noah Kagan, and there's even more learning into that book. So that is one thing that I wanted to offer your audience. It's something that can be done anywhere in the world. In that particular example, he was using Google search. Nowadays, we even have like Facebook or Instagram ads, which is another opportunity in itself. We have Amazon and a variety of other, you know, fulfillment models within the platform. That is another one. So essentially anything in which people are searching and you can identify dormant needs or solutions unaddressed marketplaces, that could be something that you could be solving for, right? So that is one approach. And a second approach is really taking action on your own aspirations. And that is pretty much what I focus on into my podcast, right? It's people that had aspirations, had dreams, had a vision, saw something different about themselves or about the world and decided to actually build a business around it, right? That is another thing that is, you know, an open invitation, and we can talk more if you want to.
Okay, thank you, Andre. So, you know, I actually just looked at the time and I realized that it's already 1:30. We've been at this for, you know, over an hour, and it's been an amazing interview so far. So one of the things that I do at the show, if you could only leave the audience with one piece of advice really quickly, what would it be for you, Andre?
That would be to show up in everything that we spoke here, as far as, you know, the punches that we get in life, you know, the delights, the dreams and everything, is really be present, show up and face what you gotta face, you know. So, you know, step up, be fully committed, full body presence, and show up. And, you know, people are going to be showing up to you, and the things that you aspire to are going to be showing up in your life.
Thank you, Andre. I appreciate that. So today, I think that we had a very, very powerful conversation about so many important topics. So failure, learning from your mistakes, growing, creating your own podcast, getting into business and marketing. So I just want to thank you for coming on the show today, and I greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. I really appreciate this conversation too, Ken, and I look forward to interacting with your audience.
Hey, that would be fantastic. So, Andre, if the audience wants to know more about what you're up to and they want to see some of the content that you're creating, where could they do so at?
They can connect with me on LinkedIn. So, linkedin.com/in/AndrePiazza. They can also connect with me on Twitter. So, I'm at APIAZZA. And finally, they can listen to my podcast on Anchor, Octanagio.
Thank you very much, Andre. I greatly appreciate it. To the listeners out there, I'll make sure to put all of Andre's social media links and the link to his podcast in the description to this podcast below. So to the listeners out there, I very much hope that you enjoyed the content of this episode. I hope that you learned even more than I did, because I definitely learned a ton. So until next time, we will catch you on the next episode of the Da Vinci Mindset Podcast.